Hello, meat friends. Welcome to Regenerative Meat Podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Tice, and today Frank and I sit down with Brandon Uhl, our head brewer, to discuss the Kwassier Mead project we're working on. This will be our last episode for Season 1 of the Regenerative Meat Podcast. Please stay tuned in, though, for Season 2 and beyond. We start off the conversation today with a little bit of history on where the Kwassier recipe came from. We then go into different ingredients that make the mead and how we'll start experimenting with them to get something tasty. Lastly, we discuss goals with the project and what we hope to accomplish with the end product. Now let's get into it.
Hey everyone! Here at Golden Coast Mead, we consider drinking alcohol not only a luxury, but a celebration of life. If you partake in this celebration, we advocate for drinking regenerative mead made from real honey to help shift the $1.5 trillion alcohol industry in a better direction. When you drink our regenerative mead, you are helping to make the earth healthier, more biodiverse, and abundant. Drop monoculture-based booze and drink regenerative mead. Visit our website, www.goldencoastmead.com, to learn more about our regenerative mead business and be a part of the celebration. Cheers.
Cheers.
Cheers, gentlemen.
What are we drinking today?
Thanks. We are drinking Wildflower Sour.
Hazy wildflower.
Thank you.
And we're with Brandon, our brewer, head brewer.
Brandon,
welcome.
Good to see you.
Thank you. You too.
How are you liking the hazy sour?
Delicious. It's getting better.
Like with time?
Yeah, I think it's getting more full and more round and more rich and more integrated. Yum.
I like that flavor description. Yum.
Yum.
How about you, Brandon?
I think it tastes great. It's sharp and lactic, but kind of creamy, too. Not unlike yogurt. Kind of a yogurty flavor in a good way.
We got our lab results back, and we sent it into ETS, Enological Testing Services, and the lacto is like 1.5 million, so the Saccharomyces cerevisiae is like 250,000. So the lacto outnumbers it like 7-1. Pretty wild.
What does that mean?
What does that mean?
For the average Joe out there listening.
That there's a lot of lactobacillus in this.
Yeah. During fermentation, when we would do cell counts, there was a ton of Saccharomyces and very little lacto. And as fermentation has basically ended, somehow, somewhere, lacto just exploded and is taken over.
Yeah, but I think it's tasting delicious. So.
Yeah, I agree.
Going in the right direction.
I agree. We're here to talk about, I hope I pronounce this right, Kwassier.
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 Yeah.
Today.
People can call it Kwassier, like KV. It's spelled KVASIR. It's a Scandinavian word, which talks about one of the ancient gods of the Norse people. It's a recipe that Dogfish had developed in 2013 after working with Dr. Patrick McGovern from University of Pennsylvania, who's a molecular archaeobiologist. So they would go to different burial sites, find the drinking vessels that were in the burial sites, find the dust on the drinking vessels, and then using modern science, be able to take a stab at what was the liquid in these drinking vessels that these people were buried with. So it's detailed in the book Ancient Brews by Dr. Patrick McGovern. And they go to this burial site from like 3,500 years ago in Denmark. And there's this woman who has some kind of fancy leather dress on, and he thinks she's maybe a priestess or a professional dancer in the upper class. And she's buried with this drinking vessel that's made of birch bark. And they scrape the dust that is the residue of the drink that was in the vessel when she was buried. And they run it through a gas chromatograph, mass spectrometer, and other machinery that allows them to reverse engineer the liquid that was in it. And they come up with a recipe, which includes wheat in their case, but since we're not a brewery, we're not going to touch that wheat. But it does include yarrow and bog myrtle or sweet gale, lingonberries, cranberries, and
birch syrup
and honey.
And honey.
Honey, also important.
And for our YouTube viewers.
There it is. We got birch syrup from Alaska.
We got some lingonberries.
Lingonberries from Canada, because these things go in the cold, because they're Nordic people. Sweet Gale, also from Canada. It's pretty cool. It's just a big black bag, but when you open it up.
What is Sweet Gale? Like, what is it?
Yeah, it was used as an herb and a traditional food for a long time. We're passing around and sniffing it for our listeners.
It's just like leaves. Home.
It's like... leaves. It's just leaves. Bog Myrtle, Sweet Gale, Myrica Gale.
Is it like a, is it used for tea at all?
Yes, it can be used for tea. It imparts a kind of toasty, roasty kind of flavor profile. So we're excited about sharing this with folks because
GCM's going to do a mead version of it, right?
Yes, exactly. Mead only. No grains involved. Plenty of herbs and spices. Man, I'm smelling the yarrow right now. I just love that smell.
So what is this technically?
Yarrow?
Yeah, like...
Yarrow is an ancient herb that's been used by humans for thousands of years. It
looks like guinea pig food almost.
That's funny. It was used millefolium, right? Yeah. Achillea millefolium. So the Roman warriors would put it on their feet to make their feet stop aching when they were marching.
Really?
Uh-huh. And I'm pretty sure it has like blood flow staunching effects. Yeah. And it was used in Groot a lot. Groot was the ancient beer that was brewed before hops were commonly added. Yarrow was a common Groot herb. And when we've made it in mead, it's delicious. It is, or when we've added it to mead, it's herbal, but it's rich and floral and a little astringent. So it's really a great complement to the honey flavor profile. So yeah, so we're excited to figure out our own iteration on this. So we're going to go through this funnel process that we call of recipe development.
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting before we get into the funnel process, like we're literally chasing history with this brew in the sense that like we want to replicate what they were doing in Norway, Denmark. And I think that's pretty cool that like we're trying to replicate something in history that not a lot of people are trying to do.
Well, I think to give credit where credit is due, you know, we're really doing our interpretation of Dog Fishhead's interpretation of Dr. Patrick McGovern's discovery.
Yeah.
So I don't even know if like cranberries were originally included in the recipe or if that was just I think lingonberries, they know for sure from the chemical signatures were in there. But I think they kind of made the call like, hey, cranberries are a flavor profile that people are used to. It's sometimes helpful to bridge weird things with things that people are familiar with. So they might have made a creative decision. Like it'd be cool to talk to Sam Caglione and see what the decision process was on that. But they have cranberries in it. And I am unclear on whether the historical recipe actually has cranberries. So if we're going to include cranberries, it's really like we're interpreting Dog Fishhead's work more so than we're straight up interpreting Patrick McGovern's work.
Fair enough. But I mean, we're using both of them and to some degree with what we're starting off with. And then we're going to come up with something that we like here and hopefully everyone else likes out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it inspires other meaderies to do their own version of Classier, I think that would be rad.
Yeah.
You know, to have like a micro category of like, hey, do you make a Classier and can be able to compare them across meaderies would be really fun.
Yeah.
Bring it back.
Bring it back. That's right. Says Brandon Uhl, whose name means beer in Norwegian, right?
Do you know if there are
yeah.
Do you know of like any cultural significance to the drink historically
that mead has a lot of cultural significance in Scandinavia. A lot of the stories and myths include the gods who are very present in their cultures. Drinking mead, celebrating with mead, creating sacred contracts with mead. Like in this case, Kvasir was this god who is the offspring of the Einir and the Vanir, which are like two
different classes of gods, but his job was to cruise around and teach people things. And he got killed by these two dwarves who brew a mead out of his blood. Yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah. Which, like, there's different interpretations of that story that, like, he was one of the ogres that were there at the creation of the universe, I've heard. But no, he's actually the offspring of the Aesir and the Vanir, which makes him kind of a unique being in the universe. And either way, they make this mead out of his blood, and it's called the Mead of Poetry. And this ogre, like, guards it jealously. And Odin, the, like, Zeus of the Norse pantheon, the all-father, he hears about this and, like, takes this epic quest to go get it. But along the way, he, like, falls in love with the ogre's daughter. So he both woos her and tricks her father and ends up killing him and stealing the mead of poetry and winning her over. But this doesn't make his wife happy. Anyways, there's a lot of layers to the story, depending on where you enter the story and who's telling it. But mead is epic in it. And Odin says in the Runehall, a drink I took of the magic mead after he gets it. And he drinks this mead and he says, I began to know and to be wise, to grow and to weave poems. Which to me has a lot of rad cultural meaning.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. So is that where the recipe stems from and the name stems from? Is that story essentially?
Apparently
they took his blood.
Well, they took inspiration from that. You know, whether this priestess dancer lady was part of acting out these stories, there's an argument that this goes back to Proto-Indo-European culture, like before the diaspora from the Caucasus Mountains, which led to the Caucasian people spreading from northern, you know, Scandinavia all the way through Europe over to Central Asia and North India, right? This whole community of people came from what are now the stands, you know, Kazakhstan, Turkmenistan, Tajikistan, like those countries. There's this Proto-Indo-European culture there and all the languages that spread out from there. There's also this core mythological religious root. Mm-hmm. And in India, there's a story of like the sun god stealing the soma, which is the drink of the gods, as an eagle, which is the form that Odin takes when he steals the Kasvir. Mm-hmm. So that mythological bridge between India all the way over here in, you know, South Asia, and then Scandinavia all the way here in Northern Europe. Pretty cool that there's this common mythology.
There's a link almost.
That probably goes back to Proto-Indo-European culture. Yeah. And like our earliest human ancestors who developed words and like the power of words. So
we should create a poem and put it on the label.
I mean that. No, yeah.
I just thought about that idea, but that's super cool. Like, yeah, the story of like both of those kind of interconnect and play with each other, which speaks to like going back even further where the origins of like these legends kind of existed, right?
Yeah, yeah. And that there were these cradles of civilization. So Dogfish had made Shatojihu, which is a hybrid brew of rice, muscat grapes, and honey. Mm-hmm. Because they found archaeological evidence of people from like 6,000 BC, so 8,000 years ago, fermenting a beverage made with rice, grapes, and honey. And in these cradles of civilization, it's kind of like you needed a certain level of technology to make a fermented beverage. You needed pottery, right? The ability to excavate and create sturdy vessels to do the fermentation in. I mean, they might have been drinking out of animal skins and woven baskets before that, but those all decay, right? Yeah. We don't have any archaeological evidence of that. So who's to say exactly what was going on before pottery and fermentation started to coexist? But I just find it very interesting that different cradles of civilization have different drinks and there are stories associated with them. And we're rediscovering them now and in a way reconnecting with that ancient history that is a part of our reality.
Yeah, I think that's super cool.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good transition into like how we're going to approach this. I know you mentioned that we aren't going to use grain, but we're going to try to stay true to the rest of the recipe. Cranberries are iffy, but kind of take us through how we're approaching that.
Cool. Yeah. Our recipe development process, we call it the funnel process. There's kind of the top of the funnel, the middle of the funnel, and then the end of the funnel. So at the top of the funnel, we're just getting a sense for what works, what should be included as we start to refine the recipe to achieve our desired end state. And it's a pretty sketch style of processing, right? Like when you're doing a piece of art, you want to sketch something out before you really start to committing to lines. So we take some jars and we fill them with mead, and then we take ingredients that we think will work well together in rough proportions, and we just start to throw them together, let them soak overnight, and then come back and taste them and see if the combination has some promise to it. Like there's going to be a direction we can take this to make it a really refined, delicious thing. So that's the top of the funnel. Once we come back and we start to taste things, we start to see, okay, these are working well together, these aren't. We focus on the ones that are working well together. And in the middle of the funnel, we start to dial in proportions. So this much of this ingredient, this much of this ingredient on this base versus this much of this ingredient and this much of this ingredient on this base. And then we start to really like play with time as well, because that's a huge variable. How long is the mead extracting? Because we're typically adding this to a finished mead. Fermenting ingredients in primary is a whole nother level of complexity. And while it's possible to do it really well, and a lot of people do it really well, we like to focus on our core honey-based meads and then adding things to them. It allows us a lot more creativity, a lot more speed in creating a new experience and a new product. And then hopefully in the future, we'll be able to like really dial these things in and get the primary fermentation version as well. But that's a ways out, to be honest.
So Brandon, what are you excited to try in the top of the funnel?
Lingonberries. My limited experience with these in mead is that they're amazing. They taste, I mean, they're like more cranberry than cranberry. My gut instinct is that if it's going to turn out really well, then I think lingonberries are going to be doing a lot of the
work.
Delicious-ifying.
I think you just made up that verb.
I did.
Yeah. Have you smelled this stuff?
No.
Yeah. He's opening the birch syrup right now. So have we started the top of the funnel at all, or we haven't done that?
No,
yet?
We're hoping to do that.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah.
What do you smell? Beef jerky?
You get a little teriyaki. Teriyaki, a little woody. Well, obviously, but more woody than maple syrup is.
Yeah, pretty cool.
I think that would go good on sourdough pancakes and smoked salmon. That's what the label says.
I was like, that sounds great. Yeah.
Shout out to sourdough pancakes.
And there's like different runs of the birch syrup, yeah. So different times
we
of the season.
We were asking about that, yeah, but that's the late run.
Yeah.
Does that mean it's like more sugary and concentrated? Or?
And the most flavorful, yeah. The other stuff is more golden and subtle. Hmm.
All right, so what mead are we going to use to start off? What do you guys think is going to be the best like base to use?
Wildflower Dry is my gut. That we've got this clean, delicious honey backbone that has some alcohol and some complexity, but it's going to be able to, I think, hold and amplify and integrate these sweet, floral, fruity, caramely characteristics from the lingonberries and the birch syrup, but then it's gonna the herbaceousness of our dry wildflower is gonna be a backbone for the yarrow and the sweet gale to then hopefully bring them all together.
That makes sense. And do you feel like this is gonna be like you're gonna try to balance the stool with the mead, or do you feel like it's gonna be one of those more complex ones where you're trying to integrate background notes to all put together this one unifying theme of the drink?
Great question.
I think that's part of the top of the stool, is when you do some initial combinations, you get a chance to determine which approach makes the most sense with what you're working with. You know, are the lingonberries naturally going to stand out, so you want to focus on how to make them shine? Or is all of it going to come together immediately, nice and straightforward, and so then you're going to just try to play with the aspects to maximize the synergy between them.
So we'll find out at the top of the funnel, essentially.
Right.
Are there any, do you want to try sweet or sour with it, Brandon, or you just want to do dry like Frank's saying?
I think dry is probably the best choice because we're going to be adding some sweetness to it, but I also would be interested in sour, partially because historically that
makes more sense.
Yeah, that it has wild yeast and bacteria.
Yeah.
And I think that the sourness is going to like help sort of stand up to the herbal and like some of the, like the, what was it? The sweet gale. Like, it does have a very like forest floor kind of smell. Very leafy.
Totally.
And I think that the sour base might kind of stand up to that a little better.
Break through it. Yeah. That's a great point. I think I'm totally open to trying at the top of the funnel, you know, a base of dry, a base of sour, and then these different general ratios.
Mm-hmm. So that's how we're going to approach it. At the end of the day, though, how do you guys envision this mead tasting, and like what's your vision for it when it's all said and done?
Where are we driving this bus?
Yeah.
I mean, that's great, because immediately my thought goes to a flavor profile that we're trying to achieve. But I think from 11 years of experience in doing this, if you start there, it's like trying to take a square peg and like pound it into whatever hole you're going to end up with. And that's just kind of violent and problematic. You know, it's like better to be like, what kind of peg do I have? And be kind of blind, you know? And then like, well, so ultimately end state that we're trying to achieve is like someone sipping this, hearing this story, tasting it. Holy smokes, I've never tasted anything like this. I get it. Like, okay, you're saying this is made with lingonberries and bog myrtle and birch syrup and yarrow and honey. What? Like, wow, this isn't, and like our Scandinavian ancestors, or if you don't have Scandinavian ancestors, ancient Scandinavian people who like sailed across the world, you know, with a wooden boat and a stone for a compass, like this is what they were drinking. That's rad. Yeah,
that's the interesting aspect to it, is that we weren't sitting around thinking, hey, you know, I really like lingonberries, what do you think would go well with those? And you're like, well, you know, I've always wanted to do, you know, yarrow and
this
wasn't, we thought of this. This was, they were doing this 3,500 years ago. So now we're going to, like, I think we're going to be surprised by the result rather than us having an intention that we're moving towards.
And we get to take our artistry, creativity, craftsmanship, craftspersonship, and move it towards like our optimal interpretation of these kind of limiting factors, mm-hmm. which is rad, right? It's like, do a piece of art, but don't use the medium that you're usually used to using. Use a different one, mm-hmm. but still make something beautiful.
Yeah, I agree. Have either of you guys done something, a project like this, like in the past, like you with beer or you with other meads? Have you guys tried to like replicate something from history or?
With beer, it's different because a style like this isn't so, well, I guess, you know, with the Dogfish Head example, it is very similar. But like with a lot of beer styles, it's like a not disconnected path to history, where like today, if you wanted to make, you know, a wit beer, let's say, like that's a very clearly defined style with guidelines and parameters that do have this connection to history. So a lot of brewing is sort of that exercise of making a historical beer style. But it's not like in this case where we're going to be surprised by the results, because this hasn't, you know, other than one example that we know of, this hasn't been done before. So, yeah, with beer, you kind of do that all the time if you're brewing like European styles.
Gotcha.
Whereas with mead, we're often trying to recreate things. So we've done Groot meads before, where we've used herbs other than hops to bitter meads. Yarrow, mugwort, meadow sweet, and they can turn out pretty incredible. Lemon balm, lemongrass, we've added to kind of freshen up the flavor profile a little bit.
But. Were there historical recipes that were inspirations for those?
Yeah, I mean, they're not as clear cut as this.
Gotcha.
It's more of a general, in the past, these were the Groot herbs, and we kind of looked at that list and like came up with our own approach that we liked. And it made for some good mead. We would love to do more.
Yeah. Who do you think is going to like this mead?
Man. Well, if we do our job, hopefully everyone that tastes it, that being incredibly optimistic, I'll revise it down to people who are really into history, people who are into Norse culture and mythology, you know, to be able to drink what the folks who told those stories and heard those stories were drinking, I think can be kind of a transportative experience in the right setting.
Yeah.
Making for a really special experience. People who are into unique experiences that you can't find anywhere else. Like, as far as I know, we're the only meadery doing this. Yeah. So hopefully we can get people excited and feeling good about that. Who else?
People just want to try something that's unique and maybe novel. I guess it's not really novel if it's ancient, but it's novel to us.
Rediscovered, yeah.
If you're just bored of drinking hazy IPAs and
smoothie beers.
Yeah.
Smoothie beers. Who do you think's gonna like it?
Yeah, I'm with Brandon. Like, experience people who just like love different experiences, I think are really gonna enjoy this. And I have faith in us to make it taste good, no matter what the recipe is, essentially. So I just think people who like that unique experience of tasting something that's different and has historical roots to it are people that will probably really love the iteration we make of it.
Nice.
People who I believe like intense flavors. You know, this isn't going to be like a lawnmower kind of drink. This is going to be like a
sit down and savor and dive into the glass. Yeah.
Do you guys think it could potentially be better at a higher ABV? Or are you guys happy with the 12 ABV that we're going to do?
I didn't think about that until just now. Oh. What do you think, Brandon?
I think 12 is probably going to be a good spot for it because all of these flavors going on plus booziness. I don't know if...
Might be too much. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. It might get kind of hot.
Yeah.
Whereas at 12, like, it could come across just rich.
Mm-hmm. What is it that about, I'm not even going to try and pronounce it,
Kvasir,
that makes you so excited about it? Like, why did you essentially have this
idea? There's a few layers. Thank you for asking. One, I love that story about the genesis of culture. And, you know, we think about India and Scandinavia as like separate, but then we see that like through this story and this drink, there's like this beautiful connection, you know? And so to actually recreate that on some level and be able to share it with people and be able to not just talk about that, but be like, this drink, it exemplifies that. I think that is deeply inspiring and hopeful to me that like all humans ultimately
come connected.
And like, we do love to drink and tell stories, you know.
The stories get better as you drink.
Depends on who's telling them. And there's an optimal level wherein if you drink too much, the stories fall off. But that's where the music and the dancing gets to take over. So I'm excited about that, about bringing people together over something that's potentially rooted in a deep historical reality. And in that, understand some deeper aspects of our human reality. Also, I do have Scandinavian ancestry. kind of makes something tingle inside me that's deep and ancient and mysterious that I get excited about when I go that place. Sometimes I like to have like a half of a glass of mead and just sit there and clear my mind of all thoughts and then see what comes up as I sip it. And I find that the ingredients that are in it have a serious effect upon that experience. So I'm excited to see what this.
Do you call that meditation?
Meditation, man. Yep.
Beautiful.
I could keep going.
Go for it. What else do you have to share?
Yeah. I mean, the experience of creating a new flavor or interpreting a flavor profile that has already been created and doing it our own way is deeply satisfying when it works. When it works and people are like, wow, that's good. And to know that without your work and creativity and teamwork with your friends whom you work with, like that experience wouldn't have existed. And that pleasure that that person then experiences wouldn't have been real is also deeply exciting and satisfying to me. So all of these reasons, the historical, the mystical, the creative, and the immediate delivery of pleasure to other people make me excited about making this.
Love it. All right. Well, thank you for sharing.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for diving in. And we'll be making this together and tasting it as it happens.
Yeah, and then releasing it.
Yeah, updating the people.
And hopefully have it online for everyone, too, to order.
It's probably going to be a local thing for a while.
If it does well.
Yeah, if it does well, then we'll look at shipping it to our 38 states.
All right. Well, you guys can cheer. My glass is empty.
Cheers.
Cheers.
All right, that's a wrap on the Quassier Mead. Please don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review us. We appreciate all the support we can get. If there's anything you'd like to know more about, feel free to email us at podcast@goldencoastmead.com with your questions, and we'll try to answer them to the best of our ability for you. Now, here's the weekly bee joke. What do you get if you cross a monkey house with a group of honeybee colonies and hives? An apiary. Mead out.